Okay, I think that's going. All right, welcome to the Identity Implementers Working Group call today. As I mentioned, I put the link to this wiki page in the Zoom group chat, so feel free to follow that link to get to this page and sign in on the attendees list. That helps us keep track of who's attending in case we need to send out information and sometime in the future. So thank you for signing up for that. Just a little bit about the antitrust policy. This is a public forum. It's a collaborative working group. And so all of us get together to collaborate on things that are meaningful to each of us and to our respective employers. And so with that in mind, everything we say here is intended to be public. And so if you have trade secrets, intellectual property, that kind of thing, just kind of, if you could keep that out of these calls, we would appreciate it. And, but we love the collaboration. We love the ideas and crosstalk. So thank you everyone from coming. Let's see, there's a few names that I don't necessarily recognize. You may have been here before, and if so, my apologies, but would anyone like to introduce themselves?
Sure, I can have a go at that. I actually heard about this call or this demo today that Matt's doing from the Aries Working Group yesterday. I've been attending the Aries Working Group meetings for, I don't know, the best part of a year or so. And I heard that Matt was doing a presentation today. I also know Ian. I met Ian in Phoenix, the Piper Ledger Forum, and I know Matt from doing the work that we're currently doing with Street Cred. So obviously that's of particular interest to us because we're developing particular SSI solutions using Street Cred as well. So that's why I'm here today.
Well, excellent. Good to have you here.
Yeah, I guess I'll introduce myself as well, Ian Costanzo. I work with a team with the BC government. And I'm also working on a health-related project out of Vancouver. So I'm interested in seeing the presentation today.
Oh, maybe there's some overlap then if you're working in all of those circles. Welcome. Anyone else want to introduce themselves?
Me. This is Luca Boldrin. I work for InfoCert, which is a certification authority, a European certification authority. We have an SSI implementation based on the sovereign network, and we are very much interested in to the relationship with the EIDAS, which is the European Identification and Trust Service, set of services. So bringing identities from regulated environment into SSI.
You know, that's very important. I'm glad you're here. Welcome. I think bridging the new SSI technologies with existing systems is an important way for us to extend what we already have and take them to more secure, more interoperable methods that we're all creating here in the community. And so welcome. I'm glad you're here. Thank you.
Glad to be here.
All right. So by excuse me. By way of announcements, the COVID-19 SSI group, fightthevirus.world, is still I think they're coming to the point where they're producing documents for public consumption that talk about how we can use SSI to ensure that people are safe and healthy as we're crossing borders and interacting in society. So if you follow that link in the announcements, they, like I say, they're getting to the point where documents are being published and it's a lot of interesting activities there. The Trust Over IP organization foundation has launched here recently, In the announcements, I have a link to the recording from about 2 weeks, as well as their white paper. And a lot of that parallels what we're doing in the sovereign and hyperledger communities, DIFF communities. It provides not so much code per se, but a lot of standards and ways to correlate and interact through the community. And so that'll provide a good framework for finding out how to interact with all of these different SSI elements that we're all working on. Now, Sovereign is standing up a steward council. So for those of you who are employed by a company or have yourself become a sovereign steward, the council is a way for stewards to provide their input and feedback and help control different things that are happening in the network. I've got a link in the announcements to the charter. Also, council member elections are underway to vote for the new set of council members. And so I think those elections are closing today, and that should lead to a kickoff meeting here in the next week or so. But that gives sovereign stewards kind of a more active voice in the in what's going on in the community, the network, the code, all that kind of stuff. And so it's a good way to get involved. For those of you who are not stewards or whatnot, you can still attend the council meetings. And so watch for those announcements to come out. Have I missed any announcements? Anything else anyone want to bring up before we get started? Okay, let's go into the working group report. So usually the format of this meeting, for those that are new, is we spend about the first half of the meeting going over some reports from a wide range of working groups that have happened since we've last met. And then the latter part of the call today, we'll turn that over to Matt Norton from StreetCred, who will talk about some of the identity efforts that they're working on. So we look forward to that. All right. Did anyone get a chance to attend the main identity working group today or this week? Okay. Any updates from Hyperledger Indy? So a couple of updates that I know about. I know they are working on some updates to Indy Node. There have been some issues that have been outstanding, and so those have, as I understand it now, have gotten resolved, and they are testing a release on the BuilderNet of those nodes right now. And or of the new software for the nodes. And I think if by today everything's going well and all the tests have passed, then they'll move that on to staging and proceed with that update. All right, anything from the SDK side or Catalyst, I guess, has moved to Aries. Okay, then. Hyperledger Aries. We had a couple of calls yesterday. Any updates there?
Really good topics. The afternoon call, we talked about community coordinated update for the out-of-band protocol. This is to switch from the connections invitations to out-of-band use for invitations as a pre-step to then later adding did exchange and the other stuff there. So that was a really good question. Had some conversation about website authorization. That's kind of did off, but kind of not, depending on which circles you're in. And then in the morning call, is Kevin on? Or I can report on that one too.
I don't see him.
Okay, so the morning call, We talked about the concept of a can I use style system that would allow us to be more readily available of which types of features were available in which software platforms, et cetera. So, and we talked about integrations with the information at the bottom of our RFCs, with the implementation sections, and other ways of making that happen. So, so that was a good conversation.
Excellent, thank you. All right, so the website authorizations. Can you give us a little more detail on where you're going with that?
Yeah, so the term DIDAuth is minorly confusing because it means different things in different circles. And I have a use case that I'm pursuing where we want to be able to log into a website without a username and a password. We all hate that. And I'm trying to get to the point where we can actually use DIDs to do so. There are the main variety in the wild is the OIDC OpenID configuration that can use that. The problem is that's very heavily designed to be used when you have an identity provider in play, OpenID style, and not necessarily direct authorization or authentication rather to the website itself. So it was a bit of a community survey, and there wasn't a lot going on, but some interest in kind of making that happen. I am not concluded about whether it's worth going the OpenID route for the sake of compatibility or not, or if we could do something much, much simpler, simply using an out-of-band message encoded in a QR code on the website, which then asks for some sort of challenge sign or something similar via DIDCOM message back to the agent that's associated with the website. So there's some opportunity there, and we can figure that out. There's a lot of edge cases to doing that, and at this point, even just a common case would be great to get solved. And so that's it was kind of a question with not a lot of community answers yet going on, and I hope that as we keep going, some of those things will be a little more clear. That might involve some writing or some proposals that then, we can evaluate against the other options to figure out which one's better. So.
Excellent. So a couple of thoughts. Our company has been looking at website authorizations and how we might go about doing that. So I'd be happy to write documents with you. So when you get to that point, let me know. I use Word almost as much as Xcode, so I'm happy to help out there. You mentioned one thing that's been kind of a topic on my mind for a while, which is putting QR codes on websites. Super convenient. Users don't have to type anything. I love the use case. One of the things that has happened in the past as identifiers have been put on web pages is hackers have kind of gone in and done a swap. Were we to do that, what kinds of, are there some security methods, some verifications that we can use to make sure that that's the valid QR code?
Somewhat. So when you talk about a hacker getting in and replacing something on your site, there's a limited number of things you can do to prevent that. One of them that I think is a reasonably good method is that there's work that's happened at the DIF to link a DID with a domain. And they have bidirectional linking there. One direction is via a dot well-known file that can indicate which DID is represented by the domain, and a corresponding record and a DNS record that can actually authorize, or rather another thing in the DID doc itself that can authorize it the other way. So one of the things that you could do is that prior to if you scan the QR code, you can actually check to see that that the DID you're being asked to prove ownership to is actually the DID associated with the website that you think it is. And so that would is one method that we can. I am sure it's not perfectly foolproof, but it might be the best option we've got. And so that's one of the things that we can do there.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, that's been something that's concerned me for a while. One of the ICOs from the cryptocurrency community kind of got hacked for the first 2 or 3 minutes because of that exact thing. And so finding a way to ensure that the link we're following is the link we intend to be following is a really important problem to solve. So I'm glad the community is looking into that as well. Any questions for the rest of the group here on what's going on in the Aries working groups this week? Okay, let's see. We've got a couple of new Aries libraries that are emerging out of Indy and becoming separate libraries under Aries. Are there any releases or milestones on those this week?
I'm in the Aries calls, we didn't hear much about those updates. So,
okay. Just curious. All right. Did anyone attend the URSA working group this week? Okay. I haven't heard that there were any updates beyond those that we talked about last time. There is a link in the chat where you can follow to see some of their latest presentations regarding the URSA project. Let's see, anyone here from that attended the DIDCOM working group this week? Sam, I guess I might jump back to you. I'm glad you're here this week.
Sorry, what was the question? I was distracted for a second.
No, it's like you've attended all the calls that are on my list this week, so it's really good that you're here.
Was this the URSA one or the?
Well, the DIDCOM working group.
Oh yes, I can talk about that. I'm less good at URSA. DIDCOM working group is good. Continue to address good topics. One of the things that has come up. We have settled on trying to avoid anything that is not a DID for DIDCOM. What that means is that if you are in DIDCOM version 1, we had the concept of embedding an endpoint in a key and saying, please communicate with that. And that was used to establish a connection during the connections protocol. And what we've come to in DIDCOM version 2 is that we'd really rather not do something that was a special case like that. And we have DID methods like DID key that allow for those sorts of things to be encoded in a normal format. So the what that has necessitated is that if you begin with something like that, like a DID key plus an endpoint, then it requires for you to rotate away from that because that's passed in the clear. And so you're instead of sort of jumping from DID and you're from key and endpoint, you're actually changing from one DID to another DID, and so we're calling that DID rotation. And the idea behind a DID is that you can change the keys and the endpoints without having to change the identifier, and that works. But there are some occasional edge cases where you want to move from one DID to another DID. And so that's particularly true in the case of something ephemeral, like used in an invitation, but it can also be true if you start from a public DID to initiate communication, and you can use DID rotation to rotate away from the public DID for the sake of that conversation and move into the pairwise DIDs that you're using for each other. And that's a really useful thing. It has the side effect that it could be used to, if you were the unfortunate user of a poorly designed DID method, it allows you to rotate away from that in the future without having to go back and start from the ground up and reestablish the existing connections you had. So that has been a topic recently, and there's an issue and there's discussions the last couple of weeks about that.
That's an important topic. I can see a number of reasons for wanting to rotate DIDs themselves. When you rotate away from an original DID to a new DID, if people are connected via that original DID, there will be a kind of a, I don't know, for lack of a better term, a forward from the old to the new.
Yes and no. That's mildly out of scope of the conversation, but the important piece, there's two types of DID rotation. One is stop using the old one. Here's the new one. But that doesn't necessarily mean you have to destroy the key or you have to completely forget it. And that's particularly true in the case of a public DID. There's an assumption because of the asynchronous nature of DIDCOM that you cannot assume that the recipient has received the message as soon as you've sent the message. And so there are some considerations where you might need to send that information. What you do is you don't actually tell them to use a new DID. You use the new DID, and then you provide provenance and proof that you're allowed to by having including a signed statement from the old DID. And what that does is it means that you can actually send several messages using that format and including that extra information before you get a response back from the other person. And then as soon as you get a response back from the other person that indicates they're using the new DID, you can stop telling them that you have proof that it's allowed. And that allows for a wide degree of flexibility in the types of asynchronous circumstances you might have, but still allowing you to begin using the new one. So it's not so much as a forward. It's I'm using the new one now. The old one, the expectation is the old one will continue to work at least briefly so that you can continue what's going on. But then as soon as the other party can receive the rotation message and the proof, then they can, then they'll begin using that new one and you can stop proving that on every request.
Excellent. I like that a lot. That's way better than a forward. So you start using the new DID, but you say, hey, I'm really this other identity and I have, I can prove that I'm that other DID. And then I'm transitioning. And so you do that in the messages. I like that a lot.
Right. And I brought it up in more detail in this meeting because it raised a few eyebrows, including Marcus Abadello. And so I wanted to make sure that the concept that we were exploring was relatively well known. And if there were pitfalls we were unaware of, that we discovered them sooner rather than later.
Yeah, that's really good. I know in the email world, we've kind of done these whitelist, blacklist things. And I envision that we may end up doing that with some of the DID communications as well. But this gives us two steps to look at. Is it a DID I recognize? Does it come from one I recognize? All right, well, that's good to know. I like that. It seems way more efficient. Just from the chat, Nathan mentioned that we should add the Trust Over IP Foundation to our discussions. I agree with that. Nathan, did you happen to attend those meetings here recently?
So I have attended some of the launch meetings, but I haven't been in the working group stand-up calls yet, something that I hope to do. If you go to the link that I shared there, you'll notice that it's a groups.io website that lists the technical stack working group, which is probably the most relevant to the folks here. If you subscribe to that mailing list, you can also get the calendar invites to those discussions. And then if you go to the subgroups link that's on the left side of that page, you'll notice that there are a few different working groups that are probably interesting to the folks who've been participating here. If you participated in the past in the Sovereign Governance Framework Working Group, you'll be very interested in the Governance Stack Working Group over there. If you've been working on the Stewards Council or on the Governance of Stewards for the Sovereign Network, the Ecosystem Foundry may be very interesting to you, or the Utility Foundry Working Group. Both of those are around building governance stacks for particular ecosystems that are using verifiable credentials, or standing up a Hyperledger Indy network for a particular domain of trust or constituency that's willing to support that with the resources necessary. So there's a few different things going on there that are interesting. They're still kind of in the early stages of deciding what needs to happen there. I would posit, this is just speculation on my part, that most of the work over at the Trust Over IP Foundation is going to have to do with governance frameworks and the legal and business rules needed to support the technology that we've been working on here at Hyperledger.
Yes, excellent. Thank you. I added that. I'll refine this list a little bit, but I added that to our list. That's an important topic to keep going over. Yes, I totally agree with you that this is feeling like more governance frameworks, less code tactical implementations of standards, but the governance frameworks surrounding them. I forgot to mention this. I attended the technical stack working group that you dropped the link into the chat, so I put it on there. Basically, this week was a getting started week. We went over the just kind of the agenda, the scope of this working group, and a couple of things like that. And so I think all of the working groups are at some various stage of getting set up and operating, getting meeting times established. I know that there's, in that meeting, there was a discussion about meeting times. And so they're trying to find a way to have, to cover the globe so that people in China and India and different places are not having to wake up at 3 a.m. to attend a call. And so there's going to be kind of a morning call and an evening call, depending on where you are, on alternate weeks. And so what that'll do is that people who are not on the U.S. time zone, where it's in the middle of the night for them, it'll be a better time on one of the alternate weeks. And so that way we'll hopefully get a much broader participation and representation across the world. So thank you very much for bringing that up. Let's see. Other than that, is there anything I've overlooked this on reports this week? I haven't heard of any W3 standards updates.
I will mention there is. The DIF has, in the past, had an interoperability working group that was designed to be an open group that did not even require DIF membership to participate in. They have, that's sort of gone stagnant in the middle of the DHS round one project as it pulled several members into there. That's re-going, and I know they feel competed against from the Trust Over IP Foundation. And so I showed up to the call, I believe it was yesterday or the day before. I was the only one representing the Aries community there, or anyone from the Aries Indie Hyperledger side of things. And they have another call today. And so that's going to be interesting to try and manage the politics of what work happens where. But their goal is to sort of seek broader interoperability such that we can demonstrate, you know, cross-company type of interop the same way that we all do, but sort of a different group of people that don't really show up to the other calls that most of us do.
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up. So that, what was the name of that group again?
It's a DIF interoperability group, and they're discussing charter today. Hope to be able to attend that meeting. And their goal, their desire, is to have people from everyone involved. And it would be awesome if we had someone within the Hyperledger community that was raring to be involved in more things. Then that would be a good opportunity.
That's great, and we probably, like several here, are members of the DIF. You mentioned that this call does not require DIF membership.
It doesn't. I believe the way that it'll end up is that to be a chair or a co-chair of that group, you would need to be a member. But normal participation in the project and everything else is not. They're not necessarily trying to make all the work happen in that group. But I believe the goal that's under discussion today. But I believe the goal is to have a clear understanding of where we are and identify gaps, and then possibly to encourage working groups in various areas to try and address the gaps. So this isn't a group where the work is necessarily trying to happen. So there's not an IPR goal with this group, but rather to understand where we are and identify missing pieces.
Okay,
or potentially places where there's too many pieces to fit in the same hole.
Okay, and that's good to know. I was unaware. I'm looking at my calendar. I've got the diff calendar here, and I didn't see that group.
I don't know if it's been more formally announced yet, but there's discussions underway to try and formulate it.
Okay. Yeah, I find it important to attend at least periodically all the groups that are doing either governance or whatever kind of cross-organization coordination, because regardless of whoever does it, that interoperability between companies and standards, and I think is really important. I think that's one of the most important things we're doing here, is finding a way to interoperate in a public stated manner.
So they identified, I think accurately, that there are two gravity wells of both of collaboration and interoperability. And one of them is the W3C CCG, and the other one is the Hyperledger community. And when they say Hyperledger, mostly they mean IDEA's IRSA, but it's easier to say Hyperledger. And so that's become obvious to many people in our larger community that those are the two gravity wells. There are some philosophical differences there that I think are larger than the actual technical gaps that exist. The Hyperledger community has been far more interested or unwilling to compromise, might be the right way of saying it, about selective disclosure capabilities for credentials than the CCG group has. And that's one of the philosophical differences that has made it difficult to care about a common technical stack because of those differences. So one of the interesting things there is the JSONLD BBS plus signatures is actually kind of a weird meeting ground where the selective disclosure people have some selective disclosure, and the CCG people say, oh, it looks like JSONLD, and so it feels like home to both. And that may actually be an interesting technical bridge between the two philosophical divided sides. So as an observation, hopefully it's helpful to somebody here.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, there's definitely not a shortage of opinions in this larger industry, which is makes a lot of these meetings often very fun and entertaining. Thank you for that. I've added that on my list. So as you attend, maybe next time you can give us a quick update on that. And as they get a little more formal and we get links, I'll add some links in here to that group as well. All right. Well, thank you everyone for the participation and for the report so far. In this latter part of the call, Matt Norton from Street Cred is gonna talk about some of their, health-related credential work. For the rest of you on the call, before we get started, if you or your companies are working on publicly announced, of course, technologies that use SSI elements or any of the components that are within the scope of this call, feel free to send me a note on Rocket Chat or email or wherever. If you could reach out to me, and if you'd like to give a demonstration or presentation on the work that you're doing, we would love to have you. We meet every 2 weeks at this time, and so we can get you on the schedule for that. So at this time, I'm going to stop screen sharing here. And Matt, are you up and ready to go?
I'm ready. Thanks, Steve.
Excellent. It's all yours.
Appreciate that. I'm throwing a link in the chat right now. The demo that we'll be going through, I encourage you to walk through it with me if you care to. My name is Matt Norton. I work for Street Cred ID, and previously was at Sovereign Foundation and recognize most, if not all, you guys on the call, and also recognize that most, if not all, you guys on the call understand a lot more about this stuff than I do, it feels like. So I'm happy to be here and happy to facilitate a conversation. We've been asked to show a demo that we debuted at IIW last month, at the end of April, however long ago that was, about getting essential workers back to work amidst the coronavirus pandemic. And just to as a disclaimer, this is meant to be a demo of two interoperating code bases. It's not a end-all be-all, take this and plug it in to start getting people back to work. We stress that any real-world application of verifiable credentials for COVID-19 test results should only be deployed with counsel from experts in medical, scientific, and legal side. But this is a demo, and the purpose of it was to show interoperability between the two code bases that are central to ARIES, developing ARIES framework, and that's Street Cred's use of ARIESframework.net and BCGov's use of Occupy. And so in this scenario, we're going to play the role of an essential worker. I'll be going back in between the holder and the issuers and the verifiers. But we're going to get some credentials to prove that we are who we say we are, or that our company has deemed us an essential employee. I've been sent by the company to do a job at the facility. And then I was recently tested for COVID-19 and the test result was negative. This one here, you'll find later on, you'll see that the actual credential that we have that we're given doesn't have a test result stating negative in it. So we're assuming in this scenario that you would only receive the credential if you were tested negative at the testing facility. and a disclaimer here again, the risk of transmission isn't eliminated in the scenario, but it helps us make better risk decisions. What we'll be using for this demo, we'll be using the Street Cred digital wallet and the some issuer web apps from the BCGov site. So my Street Cred web app is based off of our .NET framework, and BCGov's is off of Occupy. And the reason we're using Street Cred wallet here is right now we this demo uses connectionless credentials, which aren't supported by other wallet providers, or if they have, they haven't been public or put it in production yet. And so we'll be using the Street Cred ID wallet for now, but theoretically, we're built on open standards, so this should be interoperable with other SSI wallets. So here's how we're going to do it. We're going to make sure that we are on, first what I'm going to do, I'm going to log into my Street Cred portal. Oh, but there's nothing at the address, so let me get there. Now, per our conversation earlier, we do have a feature at Street Cred about logging in without a password, logging in with your wallet. I don't know the relationship between what we have out in production and the open source work and where that stands. So I wish I could have some answers for you, but I'll show you that I can scan the QR code. It asks me to for a proof request that I received when I made my account at Street Cred. I'll present that. And oh, that's why we got to do that. I remember I got to change my network. So if you have questions about our specific implementation of this passwordless login, let me know, reach out to me or anybody at Street Cred. We'd love to talk you through it. I'm gonna move my network back to the EC test network. and then we can get going through. First, what we're gonna do is we're going to get verified as a person by British Columbia. So I'll go to this. This is their test app. Agree to their services and fill in my name. My name is Matt Norton. You know, you can look at my address. I don't care. Send me a postcard. I trust you guys. And I was born on April 1st, 1995, actually. April 1st is April Fool's Day in the United States. Fun fact, I've been told that my whole life is a joke. That was a joke too, not actually. I'm gonna connect with the issuer. Again, we're connecting to, when we say connectionless credentials, meaning we're not gonna be connecting with a street cred agent, cloud agent. We're gonna be connecting with the BC Gov agents. So I'm gonna connect here. I'm going to accept the connection, new connection to add to my wallet, and now it's issuing me a credential offer. The actual process of verifying a person, you see that this is called an unverified person one. that would be specific to them, make sure that all this information is correct. But they've issued me that, and I have accepted it. I've accepted it, my credential has been issued, now I have an unverified person that will be a verified person credential in my wallet. next, we're going to get three more credentials. And please, by all means, interrupt me if you've got questions about what's happening or if you want to talk about something more. Happy to do so. We're going to get my personal health number. Again, this would be a process governed by BC Gov. For the time, it's just a random number, and giving me the date it was issued. Review and confirm. Yep, this looks good. I'm going to scan this again to connect with this issuer. This is a different issuer than the one before, ostensibly a different department in BC Gov. Taking a bit, there we go. Gotten the date it was issued and personal health number. So I'm gonna accept that. Excellent. And a success. So now we're gonna go move the Zoom bar and get this next one, get my essential worker. All right, organization legal name. This one's called Essential Worker Co. That's a made up one, that's not real. But it would have this registry ID deemed essential. And I'm gonna say hospital dietitian right now. My wife is training to be a dietitian at this time, which is pretty fun in our home. We eat a lot healthier than I did when I was single. We're going to connect with this issuer here, same process as before, accept the connection, and they're going to send me a credential offer automated. Again, this is all working in Python. This is working in .NET. It's using the Aries protocols open source to make sure, review that, make sure it looks good, and I'll accept it. Excellent. You see that this process can get quite repetitive, but that's my opinion. That's a good thing. It means we can replicate it. We're going to call this hospital one. The reason: patient charting and consultations, part of a dietitian's work, making sure that patients have what they need. This is filler information about where this hospital would be, and we can set its validity or when it expires. And we're going to say it's for this particular policy, it's 2 weeks. Get to do that, and that would be up to the verifier or the issuer to set, and the verifier to agree to. We're going to proceed to that. I'm going to do this again. Get this credential. Right, received credential offer called authorized access. I'm gonna check it, accept it. Now I have a new credential. Okay, so even though that was repetitive and a little bit long, this would represent a number of different, you got to go there and they got to walk you through their steps in order to give you the credential. But now that we have it, the rest of the process is actually really quite simple. And in reality, those processes should be integrated with existing systems, as it says here, and made much more streamlined. Once this process is completed once, the credentials are yours forever. That means you don't have to re-verify yourselves again and again. Okay, now we're going to get our COVID-19 test credential. We're going to go and get tested. It proves negative, and now we're going to get a credential that is associated with that. It was spun up in just a few minutes with the StreetCred APIs. It actually took more time to figure out the UI than it did to actually integrate the APIs, which is kind of fun. We're going to get started here. So we got to get verified. They want to verify my information that I'm a person. And then I have a personal health number. You see that? And it pops up based off of the predicates made for this verification policy. And I'm going to present this. Awesome. And that takes me to the next part of the flow. These are the results of your COVID-19 tests. This is when it happened. This is where I was. You'll notice, again, it doesn't actually say negative. So we're assuming that by getting this, it means that I have been tested negative. So we're going to confirm that as the provider. Now we're going to give that credential to this holder. See there? Yep. Looks good. Now I have a COVID-19 test credential. Awesome. Okay, so now we're going to go back here. And we're going to present the credentials to access a secure long-term care facility. I'm going into a long-term care facility, and they want to verify that I am who I say I am, that I actually do have an essential job, that I am here for a specific reason, and that that I have a COVID-19 negative test credential, and that it's not expired. So we're going to enter this long-term care facility, and they're going to ask me to authenticate. So I'll scan yet again, and this is all the things that it asks me for. Given name, family name, organization, your PHN, are you essential, what are you going to do here, where are you located, is this only to be valid at this specific location? All this information that I have gotten from my credentials, and I'm going to present it.
Hey, Matt.
Yeah.
Before you go.
I can go back.
Okay. Sorry. I just had a quick question, something that caught my attention on your mobile screen there.
Sure.
Just, you don't have to go back.
I'm doing it anyway.
Okay.
Tell me when on here.
Let's see. Yeah, right here on this proof request. So you mentioned that the data items are coming out of credentials that you have, but then there's a change button.
There is. Yeah, you can choose. I can choose from which credentials I can give this these attributes from. So let's say I was given, my given name and my family name are from this verified person agent, but if I have a credential that can be accepted by this verification policy, I can actually choose from which credential to offer that. So if I had a driver's license, let's say, and this verification policy allowed me to present my name from either the verified person agent or credential or the driver's license, I could come in here and change which one I'm presenting from. So it's still up to the verifier to determine which predicates they're going to allow as valid. And I think in this verification policy that they've done, they've determine that I can, that they're only going to take verified person given names or family names. Does that make sense, Steve?
Yeah, got it. Got it. Yeah, the, excuse me, the change threw me for a loop for a minute, but the, I guess the idea is that if you get a identity credential for home, for personal use, or one for work, that presuming the requester allows it, that you can give different attributes from your different credentials.
Yeah, that's right. And that's good feedback to know that the word change was a little confusing for a little bit. Maybe we'll find a better word for that.
Cool, thank you. Please continue.
No problem. Okay, so I'll present this. And now I'm here. Please read what your credentials are being verified. So this would be in the view of the essential service. People, they'd review this and make sure that it's all status quo. They would approve it. And now you can now be let into the facility. So again, this is this part of the process can be done over and over and over and very quickly as well with the things. You know, you'll notice that my expiry credential for the COVID-19 thing would expired in 2 weeks. So in 2 weeks, I would need to go get another one, and then it would be valid, and then I could continue coming to work. This is what we mean when we say your data and identity is portable. And we think that this could make a significant impact on the getting back to work and helping things restart amid the pandemic. I invite you to reach out if you have questions or if you want to talk about it more. Feel free to try it yourself and look forward to speaking with you more. Thank you very much.
Excellent, Matt. That's a pretty impressive demo. I appreciate you coming and joining with us today to give us an overview.
Hey, Matt, can I ask a question? Yeah, thanks.
Sure thing.
So I'm curious, and I don't expect these to really be in your demo, but I'm curious if there's been any work to sort of standardize the schemas that some of these credentials are based on.
Yeah, there has been a lot of conversation and discussion about that. Particularly, there's the COVID credentials initiative has been working on that. I don't know if they have anything ready for reuse or publication. But we have talked about what should go into the standard schema. It's a governance question, a lot more than a technical question at this point.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, yes. I mean, it's all governance.
It's all governance.
At that level. So cool. Hey, thanks. Great demo. I do have questions, but about your passwordless login, but I will ask. I'll ask outside the meeting.
Ping me, but don't actually ping me. Ping rather Thomas Love, because they actually have answers. All
I already pinged Thomas Love. I do perfect. Love you though, Matt.
Perfect. Thanks. Yeah.
So may I ask a different question?
Sure.
As I said, my company is working as well. It has an implementation. It is in fact based on AKPI. Stack, but for the mobile side, of course, that's not the solution. So we were exploring. We now have an implementation based directly on Indy, but we were considering whether to adopt the .com stack or the Go framework, which is now being being developed. One of the reasons, the fact on which to make our choice is the support for different ledgers. Mm-hmm. See, AKPI is now limited to Indy. Do you have any information about the possibility of using different ledgers with the .NET stack?
Yeah, absolutely. Our intent at StreetCred is to be ledger agnostic. The reason we have these four right now that are all Indy based. Or just that these are the ones that we know are ready for mass testing and production. But as other ledgers have become ready for production use cases and that Aries is able to interop as an open standard protocols with different ledgers, we will support that. We're not looking at interoperating with one-offs or, everybody individually, but as the open standards progress to that, to that interoperability, which Aries is designed for, and then the other ledgers become production ready, we'll adopt that as well.
Okay, thank you, Matt.
Absolutely.
I should note that none of the Aries projects that I'm aware of have intentions to only be based on Indy. The work just hasn't been yet done to integrate other ledgers.
Yeah.
Sure. It's probably a question of timing.
It's definitely a question of timing.
Totally timing and resources applied. A lot of the Aries community came out of Indy because of the birth of Aries. And so the largest mass of experienced developers came from Indy. But we need to fix that, but it's a little bit slower than we'd like.
Excellent. Well, we are about out of time for this week's call. Matt, thank you so much for joining us and giving us such a great presentation, and the fact that we have an artifact on this webpage that we can take and share is doubly good. So thank you for joining us this week. Really appreciate that.
Happy to.
And for the rest of you, thank you for joining. And I hope this has been a good learning experience for you. Feel free to, like I say, if you'd like to give a demo in the future of things that you're working on, my name is McCown on Rocket Chat. So feel free to reach out to me there. And Matt, are you on Rocket Chat as well for people to reach out to you?
I am, but not as ever present as you, Steve. I really only surface on the Sovereign one. But feel free to email me, matt@streetcred.id, if you want to reach out to me, or the support on our website comes to me as well.
Excellent. Well, thank you all, and we'll look forward to meeting again in 2 weeks.
And Steve, was this the identity working group? I may have had my calendar messed up, but... Are you signing off the identity working group call?
The identity implementers working group.
Oh, damn. I had it in my calendar for starting now. Okay. I guess I missed the, sorry about that.
Oh, no worries. I have recorded this call start to finish. And so all the updates and the great presentation that Matt just gave should be available on the cloud on our wiki page later today. So if you just go to the wiki page, it usually takes a few hours for the recording to get processed and put there, but later today, definitely by tomorrow, it should be up there.
Okay, but normally, this is the normal time for your meeting, right?
Yeah, we meet at 9 o'clock Mountain Time. So whatever time that translates.
Yep. All right, thanks a lot. I'll update my series. Okay, thank you.
All righty. Thanks, everyone. See you in 2 weeks.
Thanks, Steve.
Okay, we're all.
Thank you. Bye.